DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Authorities in Mississippi are trying to determine a motive in the shooting deaths Friday of six people in rural Tate County. 52-year-old Richard Dale Crum is in custody. His ex-wife was one of the victims, but ABC's Faith Abube says this is the 73rd mass shooting in the U.S. this year.
Now, that's an average of more than one mass shooting every single day this year. Overnight, President Biden releasing a statement saying, quote, enough. He's calling on Congress to pass gun reform legislation because gun violence is tearing apart communities across this country.
Vice President Kamala Harris at the Munich Security Conference in Germany says the U.S. has determined Russia has committed crimes against humanity in Ukraine. A 28-year-old man's in custody in California, charged with shooting two Jewish people outside of synagogues in the last week. Both were wounded, and federal prosecutors say they were targeted because they were Jewish. The man faces life in prison. This is ABC News. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine reassuring residents of East Palestine, Ohio. That's near the scene of the freight train that derailed and dangerous chemicals were burnt off. Residents have said they're skeptical that the air and water is safe. The governor Friday said,
we never thought that the municipal water was contaminated, but out of an abundance of caution, our Ohio EPA took samples which were analyzed and they in fact came back and were shown to be safe.
He says people who rely on private wells for their water supply should use bottled water out of an abundance of caution. Flu activity continues to fall in the U.S. There are just three jurisdictions, Hawaii, New York City, and Washington, D.C., that are reporting high levels of influenza-like activity. No areas are reporting very high levels. And more than 20,000 Michigan State University students have signed a petition calling for hybrid and online options for students not yet comfortable with returning to class. That's set for Monday, a week after a man fatally shot three students. Brian Clark, ABC News.
You're listening to a radio station that's part of the Civic Media Network. Find more at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The whole country is watching Wisconsin's state Supreme Court race. Mike Moen explains why.
The outcome could either maintain the court's current conservative majority or flip the balance towards liberals. University of Wisconsin political scientist Barry Burden says, aside from redistricting and voting laws, the court is expected to weigh in on abortion access with federal protections now overturned.
That seemed to elevate an 1849 law on the books in Wisconsin that essentially bans abortion services in the state.
There's now a lawsuit challenging the ban. Groups like the American Federation of Teachers have endorsed liberal candidate Janet Protasiewicz, who has suggested abortion rights should be protected. Meanwhile, conservative candidate Dan Kelly has received donations from one of the largest anti-abortion donors in the U.S. Lisa Graves of the watchdog True North Research says it's important for voters to know where so-called dark money is coming in from, as certain outside groups back candidates for reasons beyond judicial fairness.
What we've seen on the right is a focus on supporting judicial activists, in particular people who they believe will reverse legal precedents like Roe and other precedents that millions of Americans rely upon.
Kim Kohlhaas of the Wisconsin affiliates of the American Federation of Teachers says their endorsement of Judge Protasiewicz reflects a desire to maintain a fair government through the state's highest court.
We've seen cases in the past where it has very much been decided upon politics, and we need to have rulings that are based on the state constitution and democracy.
She says that aligns with calls to ensure access to health care, including reproductive care. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Fox Valley, regional and state news and commentary. For us to find common ground, Civic Media.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crudités at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were Crudy Takes.
Crudy's Takes. See, man, it all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Morning Cannolis with James Centel is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy!
Welcome! Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning and welcome to our weekend review, our analysis, and our discussion of those most important stories, those news items in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you for joining me on this two-hour broadcast coming out of Civic Media. We're here this morning, the studios of WAUK in downtown Waukesha. As always, we're at the Shaw, 540 AM, 101 FM. My producer and I are here also to solicit, to take, to entertain your phone calls, your thoughts, your comments, your questions. That number is 844-967-2789. One more time, that's 844-967-2789. Here on Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, February 18th, 2023. This is our 35th broadcast since beginning way back in June of last year. And as always, our syllabus, our academic approach, our plan this morning, as always, is ambitious. Lots and lots of things to talk about this morning, but also hopefully both informative and inspiring in ways big and small. We always ask these three questions. What happened? What are the facts about what took place this past week in those areas of law, government, and justice in America? Why is it important? Why do we care? Why is it relevant to our lives and our livelihoods here in these United States of America and right here in the state of Wisconsin? What is relevant about those news developments? And third, often, what do we do about it? What is the action that we take? What is the active thing that we can do in response to good things and sometimes challenging things in our nation? We're going to talk about all of those questions, hopefully get some answers along the way with your participation again this morning on Morning Cannolis. We do have a very aggressive but ambitious and approachable agenda for this morning. We're going to talk a lot about a principal issue this morning, and that is revisiting in many ways this continuing notion that the 2020 election was stolen. And believe it or not, this past week, in all of those areas in law, in government, and in justice in America, huge numbers of stories, some of them in the headlines, others of them not so much, that reaffirm fundamentally at core this notion that the big lie was just that. It's big and it's a lie. That there was, in fact, voter fraud in the 2020 election. Nothing could be further from the truth. We have lots of stories this week to talk about, to analyze, that reaffirm the fundamental notion that our elections in the state of Wisconsin, throughout the United States of America, including the election coming up just this week and again in April here in the state of Wisconsin, is safe, it's secure, it is reliable, and it is premised upon the good and outstanding work of poll workers, of people, supervisors, clerks, who make certain that our elections here in these United States have integrity. An affirmation this past week in so many different ways. I'm going to talk about a defamation lawsuit involving Dominion voting machines, which we've talked about before. I'm going to talk about what's going on in Fulton County in Georgia. Fani Willis and the DA there, who is probably on the verge sometime very soon of returning grand jury indictments against people who attempted to undermine the election there in contravention to the notion that these elections there and throughout the nation are safe and secure. I want to go back to Washington, talk a little bit about Jack Smith. His focus, likewise, on January 6th, this notion once again that the election was stolen and needed to be resolved through some overthrow of the government, completely wrong once again. We'll talk a little bit about Mar-a-Lago and classified documents along the way. I'm going to talk about the release just this past week of information that Donald Trump knew all along that the election was in fact safe and secure, legitimate, and that he had lost. I'm going to talk about one additional defendant among the 1,000 or so among the January 6th defendants who have been brought into the halls of justice for their violent behavior on that day. And then also talk about what's happening with respect to the seditious conspiracy trials that continue to go on in Washington, D.C., in the federal district courts there. And again, some very interesting engagement of the defendants there with the former president. That's the tease for probably our second hour this morning. All of them related to this notion that our election in 2020, safe, secure, legitimate, and right in the end. And so we begin this morning, as we always do, with a look back in history. And this morning, once again, lots, if not all, of our historical look backs also connect, as it always does. History always connects back to the present, right? And so in 1861, February 18th, 1861 was the day that Confederate President Jefferson Davis was inaugurated in a place called Montgomery, Alabama. Alabama, the start of the Civil War, inaugurated at that time as the president, the executive of what was going to be a new nation, the Confederacy. Obviously, you know well, Civil War prevented that from happening. The leadership, the dramatic leadership of Abraham Lincoln preventing that from happening. And of course, one of America's most grisly, horrific wars, plainly the only war fought on our own lands in the wake of our own Revolutionary War, the Civil War of 1861 to 1865. How is that related to today's case? Well, we're still seeing ramifications of that, right? We know that today we continue to fight in many ways the battle for voting rights. We emancipated through the Emancipation Proclamation issued by President Lincoln at the time. We emancipated the slaves at that time, but we're still fighting for fair voting. And indeed, coming out of Alabama, the very place in 1861 that Confederate President Jefferson Davis was inaugurated, we have a Supreme Court case pending right now in front of our United States Supreme Court in 2023, challenging the options, the opportunities for people of all races, all national origins, of all colors, of all immutable characteristics to vote in America. We've talked about that before. We're going to talk about that certainly in the future as well. 1885, February 18th, 1885, Mark Twain published The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. I suspect that many of us, if not all of us, required reading in high schools, colleges. Why does that reverberate to this day? It's also one of those books that has sometimes found its place on the list of books being banned in America in 2023. This lion of academics and of literature in America, writing The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, sometimes today on those lists of banned books, horrifically robbing young people, middle-aged people, and elderly people of the capacity, the ability to enjoy this great, wonderful, meaningful, lesson-filled story about America. 1965, February 18th, 1965, was the day that a church deacon named Jimmy Lee Jacobson was beaten and shot. He was, as a result of that event, in the context of some peaceful marches that were taking place in Marion, again, in Alabama. He was shot, he was beaten, and as a result of that, his death 8 days later, it inspired the Selma to Montgomery watches of those times and the marches that took place between Selma and Montgomery that are now a part of our nation's history. We know today that the beating death of Tyree Nichols continues to reverberate in our national consciousness and our national horror once again. Just yesterday in Memphis, the five police officers who've been charged with the heinous, horrific murder of Tyree Nichols early in January of this year, were arraigned before a district court trial judge there in Memphis. Each one of them pled guilty. We hasten to add, as we always do, that all defendants in America on our Constitution, under the Constitution of Tennessee, are presumed innocent until proven guilty. Nonetheless, yesterday, all five of them arraigned in that criminal proceeding, probably going to trial, if not later this year, sometimes next year, as pretrial proceedings proceed, again, in the wake of what happened to Jimmie Lee Jacobson way back in 1965, reverberations today, to this day, as the judge in the Tyree Nichols case reminds us all about the right to trial, right to a fair trial, and this notion that in America, we exalt and we focus on the rule of law, something that the family of Tyree Nichols also expressed yesterday in the wake of that arraignment, the aspiration for justice, the anticipation that whatever happens in that trial, that justice is done. It was in 1970, February 18th of 1970, that the Chicago defendants, the Chicago Seven defendants, were found guilty of inciting riots in previous times. They were found guilty, and of course, that also reverberates today as we think about another riot that happened on January 6th, and that one, again, also being the focus of a lot of attention, not just recently, but also this morning, once again, as we talk about updated recent stories in our national lives and livelihood. 2001, February 18th, was the day that an FBI agent named Robert Hansen was arrested for spying on behalf of the Soviet Union. He was subsequently convicted for that offense conduct and sentenced to life in prison and remains in federal prison to this day. Robert Hansen on this day in 2001. And of course, that too has its reflections in the news of 2023. You recall well, as we talked on this broadcast and others of civic media, that just recently this now former FBI special agent named Charles McGonigal was also arrested. What? For engaging with a Russian oligarch, his name Oleg Deripaska, investigating him, but also on his payroll at the same time that the FBI is investigating him for his conduct. Deripaska, of course, under indictment based upon the Mueller investigation of now a couple of years ago. So once again, that history repeating itself again and again. It was in 2014, this day in 2014, that the Ukrainian Revolution began. Protesters, rioters, shooters in Kyiv, a capital in the nation of Ukraine that we continue to hear about even to this day, the overthrow of the Ukrainian government at that time, the autocratic government of Viktor Yanukovych at that time, happened on this day in 2014, leading, of course, ultimately to the democracy, the republic that we know in that nation today that is now being not only stressed but attacked by Russia and Putin, and as the Ukrainians push back on that, they certainly remember the days when they did not have a democracy of the past. And finally, another important date that brings us to a programming note, and that is in 1988. It was February 18th, 1988, that a man named Anthony Kennedy was sworn in as our 106th Supreme Court Justice. Anthony Kennedy, again, who recently retired, leaving another vacancy in the Supreme Court that was then occupied by another justice confirmed by the Senate. I'm going to talk more about the consequences of that and talk about a programming note related to the Supreme Court right after this first break here on Morning Cannolis here in the studios of WAUK Radio.
Douglas LaFollette, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Good to be here, Mike. Across the country, in most every state, the Secretary of State is the person who is in charge of the election. And we've seen lots of hanky-panky in Florida back during the Al Gore elections, in Ohio and Georgia and Arizona and Michigan.
We appreciate you coming around, sir.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio.
on the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. on WISS 1100 AM 98.3 FM Oshkosh Air Support.
You are never far away from your favorite local radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app, and we invite you to get social with us by following our network's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook pages. Want even more? CivicMedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast. A mix of clouds and sun this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 37. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Lows level off around 26. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Highs level off around 41. A dusting of snow Monday through Monday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 24.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media. Civic Media.
And we are back this morning, February 18th of 2023. Thank you so much for joining me and my producer, Calvin. We're taking your phone calls this hour and next hour, as always, at 844-967-2789. As we begin this hour, this segment, to launch into some of the major stories that are animating justice and law and government in America. Right before the break, I was reviewing some of the major events that took place on February 18th, including on February 18th of 1988, the swearing in, the investiture of Anthony Kennedy as our 106th Supreme Court Justice. Of course, his ultimate resignation, he remains alive, very much a part of our national jurisprudence, led the way to the appointment of subsequent Supreme Court justices, including an individual who served as his law clerk at the time that Justice Kennedy was on the Supreme Court. His name, of course, Brett Kavanaugh. We also know that Donald Trump, the president at that time, also appointed two other Supreme Court justices, Amy Coney Barrett and Neil Gorsuch, obviously changing dramatically, moving in the direction of a conservative view. The United States Supreme Court, again, lots to talk about there. And that does, in fact, lead us into what I promised would be the special programming note discussed a little bit on last week's show, but also reminding you about what's going to be coming up the next three Saturdays. That is February 25th, March 4th, and March 11th. Calvin and I are going to be presenting to you a three-part series very much focused upon the Supreme Court. It's been a while since we've talked about that. We know well the Supreme Court is in the midst of its 2022-2023 term, began on October 1 of this past year. We have gone through October, November, December, January, February, not quite halfway through the 12-month term of the support of the Supreme Court, but knowing that in the coming 5 months, some major decisions coming up in very important areas that we have discussed before, major cases to be decided. We're going to go back and do some updates on those, some things that have happened in connection with the oral arguments on many of those cases. 4 months before those major decisions come out, probably in May, in June of this year, perhaps also in July. And along with all of that focus, three major components of these special programs coming up the next three Saturdays. A little bit of review of how the court works, how it operates, what's its structure, its process, its procedure. Lots of good civics coming up there, animated by many of your questions, your comments along the way about how we get there, how the Supreme Court does its business, sometimes plainly in secret, sometimes very much in public. We're going to revisit some of those core civics issues. We're going to talk about some major cases, one or two, that define America in the 21st century. That's a difficult thing to wrap our heads around. I'm going to chat about one or two of those that continue to animate who we are today. And then we're going to talk about recent news of the Supreme Court having to do with ethics, having to do with things like the leak of the Dobbs decision, having to do with the demeanor of Supreme Court justices, both on and off the bench. Lots of things, once again, in the news on a regular basis. So look forward to those broadcasts coming up February 25th, March 4th, and March 11th, a renewed focus upon the Supreme Court as we anticipate these major decisions coming up later this year. And finally, I want to comment upon one more thing that's happening tomorrow, and that is we're going to observe a dark event in American history, February 19th, 1942. So 1942, but on February 19th, tomorrow was the day that Executive Order 9066 was issued by a president named Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Don't expect any of us to remember what the number of that is, but the name of it and the content of it certainly reverberates to this day. FDR authorized on February 19th of 1942 the forced removal of all persons under this executive order deemed to be a threat to the national security from the West Coast to so-called relocation centers further inland. That was what the executive order read on that day. We know well what this is all about. This was the internment of Japanese Americans based upon this completely unsupported belief that Japanese Americans, residents, and many of them citizens, would somehow compromise our nation's security and well-being just by virtue of their national heritage. Over the period of the next 6 months, in the wake of that executive order on February 19th, over 122,000 men, women, and children of Japanese ancestry in this nation, 70,000 of those American citizens of our nation, were moved forcibly to these so-called assembly centers, these relocation centers. We know them now as internment camps. They were evacuated, and they were confined in these isolated, forced removal locations. They were fenced in. They were guarded relocation centers. These internment camps held them for many years. They were in Colorado, Idaho, Arkansas, Wyoming, California, Utah, and Arizona. We know at the same time that even though this was going on, no suggestion at all that they would be less than fully allegiant, as would all other Americans. But we know at the time that Japanese Americans controlled less than 4% of California's farmland in 1940. But believe it or not, they produced more than 10% of the total value of the state's farm resources. And so, again, taking those wonderfully productive, those American citizens and interning them into these camps, truly a violation of civil rights, human rights. Stunningly, once again, as you well know, the Supreme Court affirmed the legitimacy, the legal rightness of that order in a case called Korematsu. Again, a blot on the Supreme Court history, ultimately discounted and effectively disassociated from the Supreme Court by John Roberts, our present Supreme Court justice, but nonetheless remains a part of our history. And in 1988, in the wake of all that, not that long ago, the United States Congress passed some additional legislation beyond some post-World War II legislation that acknowledged the injustice of that 1942 executive order, Public Law 100-383. It provided some neutral restitution, some partial restitution, $20,000 to each individual. So all of that happening again on February 19th, following the executive order of that day. Come back right after this break. We're going to take some callers and then begin to talk about those other major issues in America in 2023. Stay with us.
Fox Valley regional and state news and commentary for us to find common ground. Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Authorities in Mississippi are trying to determine a motive in the shooting deaths Friday of six people in rural Tate County. 52-year-old Richard Dale Crum is in custody. His ex-wife was one of the victims, but ABC's Faith Abube says this is the 73rd mass shooting in the U.S. this year.
Now, that's an average of more than one mass shooting every single day this year. Overnight, President Biden releasing a statement saying, quote, enough. He's calling on Congress to pass gun reform legislation because gun violence is tearing apart communities across this country.
Vice President Kamala Harris at the Munich Security Conference in Germany says the U.S. has determined Russia has committed crimes against humanity in Ukraine. A 28-year-old man's in custody in California, charged with shooting two Jewish people outside of synagogues in the last week. Both were wounded, and federal prosecutors say they were targeted because they were Jewish. The man faces life in prison. This is ABC News.
Hey, everybody. How we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. And it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor. Yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Hello there. My name is Seychelle, and what makes the Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich original to me is the punch of flavors that's unlike any other. You get the crispy tenderness of the chicken and that hint of sourness from the pickles. Ta-da!
Hey, I'm Juan, and what makes the Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich original to me is you know you're going to get chicken that's crispy, golden, and juicy. This is the gold standard of chicken sandwiches.
Order the original Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich on the Chick-fil-A app today. Real customers paid for their testimonials.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Go by any construction site in Wisconsin, you're going to see a lot of Michael's trucks. Since 2014, they've had more than $1 billion worth of contracts with the state government.
A large part of those coming with Foxconn without any results in that area.
Do we want a governor who might be giving his brothers the contract? I think he needs to answer that before the election.
We'll just kick that one down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it, but of course, Michael's corporation would get to build that said bridge.
Listen Monday through Friday from 2 to 3. It's Dueling Tangents.
As goes Wisconsin.
Mandela Barnes, future runs. Not yes, not no.
You know, I'm not closing the door, right? Like, taking a loss is not easy. And it's tough, too, when it's such a razor-thin margin. You know, I know some people who just get up right away and decide they want to run again. Like,
yeah.
I'm not there. But, you know, it's all timing.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
We are back in this, our first hour of our weekend review, analysis, and discussion of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. We're going to launch shortly into our morning discussion of some of these major news stories just from this past week that reaffirm once again this notion that the 2020 presidential election was not stolen. We've got that affirmation from many different venues, many different places, all to the same end, that the big lie was just that, a lie and big. And that there is nothing to be concerned about when it comes to legitimacy of our elective process in America. Before we get to all that, we do have some callers, which we appreciate tremendously. Your comments, your questions, your perspectives. Let's begin with Dana from La Crosse. Dana, glad to have you with us this morning.
Good morning, Jim. Beautiful Saturday out there today.
It is.
First of all, like always, I just want to thank you for your show. It's just a topical, timely show to have for the people I'm just wondering why you went around sooner, but you really do a good job of explaining the law and reminding the people that we are a nation of laws and how that law is supposed to work.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much.
I appreciate
hope to hear you
so
for years to come.
Very good.
You betcha.
Good.
I've seeked out some of your speaking engagements that I find on YouTube, and I watch catch one of those once in a while.
Lots of Jim Santoli there, right? Right. Very good.
You betcha. Excuse me. So I'd like to bring up the Fox News revelations.
Yes.
Excuse me. And most of us that are informed and keep ourselves informed, we've known for a long time what Fox is and what they're all about. But this is definitely revealing to a large majority of America. And first of all, I don't know what the laws allow the government to do about such a blatant propaganda network in our airwaves. But that aside, I'm wondering what you anticipate, how public this will end up getting, what it will do to the lexicon in this nation, and what you anticipate that may do to Fox as a viable network.
I'll
take your analysis off the air. Thank you so much, Jim.
Dana, thanks so much for calling in, because that's a perfect segue into this first story, and I'm going to spend some time talking about that. Other callers, stay on the line with me. I'll get to you, I promise, but I'm going to spend some time not only responding to Dana, but also because it's at the top of our agenda. So let's go back and do a little bit of history. As Dana indicated, it was about a year ago, late March of 2022, we first began to hear about all these kinds of concerns about Dominion Voting Systems, an election technology company that was at the center of what was then and remains this completely baseless pro-Trump conspiracy about rigged voting machines. So what happens is that way back, again, a year or so ago, even 2 years or so ago, Dominion begins to push back on this notion that somehow it was responsible for the big lie. It was responsible for undermining the election of 2020. And in particular, files a lawsuit, a major defamation lawsuit. Again, in response to Dana's very good questions here, this is a civil proceeding. It's not criminal in nature, brought by Dominion, the leadership of Dominion, saying, you know what? It is not true. It is not true that we are responsible through our machines, through our activities, for undermining the 2020 election. And they file that lawsuit, as Dana just so appropriately said, accurately said, against what? Against Fox News and its powerful owner, a fellow named Rupert Murdoch, someone we all know well. And they allege in that lawsuit, speaking about $1.6 billion in damages, that the things that Fox News has said on the broadcast, on its broadcast, many, many different talking heads on that network, on that so-called news station, indicating that Dominion and its voting machines are somehow responsible for undermining the election, simply false, completely untrue. And significantly, the news that comes out of this past week, knowing that that information presented in the course of their Fox News broadcast was, in fact, untrue. You may recall well that Dominion also sued Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell, same kind of thing, for their statements, also in public forums, identifying that Dominion somehow was responsible for undermining that election. And again, at the time of the filing of the lawsuit, very important, the Dominion's lawyers said this: the truth matters. The truth matters. Lies have consequences. Fox sold a false story of election fraud in order to serve its own commercial purposes, severely injuring Dominion in the process. That's the damages. That's why they're seeking about $1.6 billion. And the lawyers at the time went on to say, if this case does not rise to the level of defamation, that is materially false statements in the public domain about what this entity, Dominion, did and did not do, then nothing does. Dominion was founded in 2002, again, as I said before, one of the largest manufacturers of voting machine equipment in the United States, about two dozen states or so, including several that were actually carried by the former president, Donald Trump, in the 2020 election, used that equipment. These allies of Donald Trump falsely portrayed Dominion in the past and to this day as biased toward Mr. Biden and the ultimate president, as we know well. And they argued without any evidence, which is the focus of the lawsuit, that somehow Dominion was tied to Hugo Chavez, the long dead Venezuelan president, and the founder of Dominion, a fellow named John Poulos, and other employees in the wake of that were on the receiving end of harassing, threatening messages from people who were convinced that the company had undermined these election results. Again, a part of the damages suffered by them. In addition to all of this, in addition to this particular focus, we know well that Dominion's lawyers identified sort of an unusual argument made by Sidney Powell in a motion. And it also underscores the ridiculousness of this proposition that somehow, number one, the election was stolen. Number two, that Dominion was responsible. In the lawsuit against Sidney Powell, again, a separate lawsuit, in the course of that litigation, her lawyers asserted that because the political language is often inexact, they said this: no reasonable person would accept those claims, Sidney Powell's claims, as fact. That motion effectively arguing that Sidney Powell's claims, his statements by her, by Rudy Giuliani, and frankly by others on Fox News, were so completely crazy that no reasonable person could possibly understand them to be real, that they're hyperbolic and therefore not defamatory. Well, very nice try. That notion that these are so ridiculous that you couldn't possibly interpret them as being real. Nonetheless, the lawsuit continues. Why is it back in the news today? Why are we talking about it with Dana, with all of you? Well, this past week, further confirmation that that lawsuit filed a while back not only has legs, Dana, to respond to your question, but is one of these very unusual cases that normally are maybe dismissed because of the high standards that need to be shown in these kinds of cases in a defamation lawsuit brought by a company against a media provider. We'll talk about that in just a minute, a case called New York Times versus Sullivan, a very high standard to meet when you're attacking a news media outlet, a provider of news out there. This one may not only survive that, but an awful lot of information provided just this past week to suggest there is evidence of exactly that, of defamation and of actual malice by the Fox stars and the Fox leadership. What happened this past week in connection with the continuing pretrial litigation? Again, this lawsuit scheduled to go to trial, according to the judge, in April, just a couple of months from now, scheduled for jury selection beginning in April. What happened in the anticipation of that trial is briefs are written, right, by parties in the context of litigation posturing. And during the course of those brief exchanges, B-R-I-E-F, not meaning small, but memorandums of litigation position, we heard for some of the first times some of the specific representations, communications among the Fox leadership, among those folks who are on the air, confirming that not only did they recognize that the big lie was just that, that there was nothing to this notion that the 2020 election had been stolen, but importantly, that they knew it. Host Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, names perhaps you all have seen on the news, maybe you sometimes watch Fox News, repeatedly even insulted and mocked Trump advisors, according to some of the internal communications now gotten by Dominion as the plaintiff in this lawsuit and produced in connection with these legal memorandums being written. All those also include Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, a lot of text messages being exchanged. Here is at least one of them. During the course of an exchange between Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham, Tucker Carlson writes this: Sidney Powell is lying, by the way. I caught her. It's insane, he says. He writes that on November 18th of 2020, very shortly after the 2020 election. Laura Ingraham responds, Sidney is a complete nut. No one will work with her. Ditto with Rudy. These are things that they themselves said to each other in text as at the same time as they're on the air talking about stealing and having stolen the election through these Dominion machines. Carlson comes back and says, our viewers are good people and they believe it. He added, making clear that plainly he did not. Now, we know all of this because this is being produced in the context of a partially redacted filing of about 192 pages of this past week that contain these revelations about these deliberations inside the network. Fox, needless to say, has attempted very strongly to keep much of this evidence against it under seal. And again, we're probably going to hear more about that in the future. But this is the first insight into this notion that inside Fox in particular, they knew about and they nonetheless continued to perpetuate this notion that the 2020 election was stolen. On one occasion, the head, the owner of the Fox News, Rupert Murdoch, this powerful owner, actually watched Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell on television, and he told a woman named Suzanne Scott, the chief executive of Fox News Media, terrible stuff damaging everybody, I fear. That's Rupert Murdoch, again, disclosed just this past week. This same brief that I'm talking about depicts Ms. Scott, again, this chief executive of the Fox News Media. Colleagues described her as sharply attuned to the sensibilities of the Fox audience, that plainly establishing that she was well aware that Trump's claims were completely baseless. And when another Murdoch-owned property named the New York Post, you may know that well, published an editorial urging Trump to stop complaining that he had not been cheated out of the election, Ms. Scott, again, this chief executive of news media, Fox News Media, distributed that widely among her staff. And Murdoch actually thanked her for doing so. Lots and lots of those kinds of revelations during the course of these past 8 months. How do we get this? This happens in discovery. That is the production, the necessary production in a civil case. And let me make a couple more comments before we take some more callers and begin to digest this a little bit. I mentioned before that all this is analyzed under the predicate, the structure of a case called New York Times versus Sullivan. And it falls upon Dominion now as a part of this civil lawsuit to prove that Fox acted with actual malice. Actual malice. This is the long-standing standard that requires Dominion to prove that Fox either it's through its guests, its hosts, its executives, knew what was going on, was being said on the air, was false, and allowed it anyway. Or that people inside Fox perhaps were recklessly negligent in failing to check the accuracy of their coverage. In this particular case, highly likely the Dominion will be able to meet that very high standard. We're going to talk more about that high standard when we come back after this break. New York Times versus Sullivan, the fact that these revelations can, in fact, support that high standard. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about a couple more things said, disclosed during the course of discovery just this past week. Stay with us for that continuing discussion.
Thank you for listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
My Shiro always goes the extra mile, stretches every dollar, puts others first. But now it's your time, Mom. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org.
brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural disaster. Sign up for local alerts, prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon with a high of 37. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lows around 26. Tonight, overcast. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Highs level off around 41. A dusting of snow Monday through Monday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 24.
Your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network. CivicMedia.us.
Welcome back. We are talking this morning about news in America that further reaffirms the notion that the 2020 presidential election was not, in fact, stolen by anybody, nor was it the result of election machines, including those owned and operated by Dominion. Talking before the break about this lawsuit, a lawsuit that is now looking more and more credible with each passing day, and the disclosures just this past week of things said among the on-air hosts, among guests, among leadership, that suggests not only did Fox News know that what it was saying to America was false, but did so purposefully and willfully. I mentioned before, right before the break, that Fox needs to show actual malice, this standard that requires that Dominion prove that Fox guests, its hosts, executives, knew what was going on and the air was false, allowed it anyway, or that people inside Fox, its employees, its leadership, were recklessly negligent in failing to check the accuracy of their coverage. Again, Dominion seeking about $1.6 billion against Fox for that defamation and the damages that it and its individual leadership members suffered. A final thing before we get to some additional callers on this, in response to Dana's specific question about whether or not this particular lawsuit will have an impact. It should, Dana. It should. Why? Because it does underscore the notion that in America, even under New York Times versus Sullivan, there are standards by which journalists and media placement platforms out there need to conform. And this is one of them. This is a situation where you do have a clear set of evidence that indeed Fox News was violating the fundamental civil principles of defamation. Listen to this. Dominion's goal, of course, aside from convincing the jury that Fox knowingly spread these lies, plainly is to build a case, to Dana's point, that goes straight to the top of Fox and sends this message not only to the Fox media executives, the empire, Rupert Murdoch, but all members of the family there, if you will, the corporate family who are responsible for this, also should send, Dana, a message to all Americans. The Dominion filing, this is past week, says this: Fox knew from the top down, Fox knew. That brief, that same brief, cites senior executives and editors, not on-air people, responsible for shaping Fox's coverage behind the scenes, who weren't buying into this election denial scheme either. And finally, no reasonable person would have thought that. This is from the network's politics editor at the time. His name is Chris Stilwart. He was referring, of course, to the allegation that Dominion rigged the election. He said, no reasonable person would have thought that. Bill Salmon, Fox's managing editor, again, information disclosed this past week, quoted as saying this, it's remarkable how weak ratings make good journalists do bad things. Wow. Condemning statements, inflammatory statements, and revelatory of a so-called news station that plainly on this and probably many other issues, knowingly deceiving the American public, people who watch it, into believing something that they knew is not true. To answer your question, Dana, this lawsuit does have legs. We will see what happens come April. It's possible it may settle out of court. An awful lot of people say would love to have all of this displayed in the courtroom where we would also be able to see that publicly. possible that Dominion could settle. It's seeking, again, this huge amount, $1.6 billion in compensatory damages. That could always happen. But damage done here, frankly, to Fox, of course, and its reputation, but also to America. And that's the larger point, which is by perpetuating this lie for more than 2 years now, convincing people that indeed the 2020 election was fraudulent, that it was somehow undermined by Dominion, that somehow it was not the result of legitimate voting across the country, knowing that that's not true, and reaffirming the fundamental principle of today's program, which is the 2020 election did have legitimacy to it. So, Dana, thank you very much for opening up the door to that exposition of that first major news story of this morning. We're going to continue with our discussion of that and perhaps other stories. Dick, calling in from Madison. Dick, glad to have you with us again this morning.
I just like the second Dana's opening. It's a great show. Question. It's a little off topic, but it swirls around the former president.
Yes.
I saw Michael Cohen on Thursday on the Cole Wallace's show, and I wasn't aware of this. But they said that he had been subpoenaed by a law firm. Now, he said, I've communicated some 16 times with this ongoing investigation, and these attorneys for Trump now, I wasn't aware that a law firm or attorneys could subpoena somebody. I thought that was for the courts or a judge to do.
Right. So,
and it sounds like what they're trying to do is portray their subpoena into, you know, looking like they're actually part of the whole investigation. Right. And it just struck me as weird hearing about a subpoena from a law firm.
Right. And so, Dick, I will tell you that I did not see that particular item of news. I do know that in connection with the 16 appearances, I believe that what Michael Cohen was talking about in that connection was that he continues to work with what? He continues to work with the Manhattan DA's office, DA Bragg there, who is continuing to do an investigation of Donald Trump, specifically related to finances and this so-called catch and kill situation where monies were paid to Stormy Daniels and one other woman for being quiet about affairs that the president, the now former and then future president, had with them during the 2016 election. Alvin Bragg is continuing to investigate that. And I do know that Michael Cohen has talked about his repeated appearances before investigators inside that government entity that continues to look at that particular matter, a matter that was also effectively abandoned, if you will, by the United States Department of Justice under the Trump administration, under the administration of a former attorney general named Bill Barr, you know well. But it may well be that there are some other attorneys out there. We know well that civil litigators can, in fact, initiate lawsuits, can certainly talk to witnesses in advance of doing that. I did not hear that particular item of news, but your point is still well taken, Dick, regardless of where this was and what Michael Cohen may or may not have said about his engagement. He plainly continues to work with state law enforcement in New York State as they continue to investigate Donald Trump. And again, these efforts to undermine our election in when? 2016. He talked in particular about the fact that initially the conversations he was having were very at the high level, went from sort of chapters ultimately to paragraphs, ultimately to sentences, and now to a granularity that he is providing to them. Plainly, he has cooperated a huge amount, not only with the state, but also ultimately with the federal government. Michael Cohen, the only person to go to prison, a federal conviction, a federal sentence, spent time in federal prison for his involvement in that undermining of our election back in 2016. I'm going to talk more about that and other matters as we go into our second hour. Callers, stay on the line. We've got a lot of discussion this morning about the 2020 election, 2016 election, and other matters related to the future of democracy.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.